Okay, we'll start. First of all, I'd like to say something about the church that we're in. You know, we travel around the world constantly, giving teachings and meeting new people, and in every city or every country there's a different place, and we didn't know where to have the teaching in Phoenix. We were supposed to have it at a resort because the general manager of the resort fell in love with these teachings, but then he quit like 3 weeks ago. Then we were running around looking for a venue, and Jeff and Jim, they found a nice place. And I mean, I was walking around today and thinking that the look and feel of a place, you can tell what's going on there, right? So I was in an office. We had an emergency today. I went in an office, sat there, and it was nice and clean. And everything was orderly, and there wasn't any junk. It was like a meditator's office. And the whole feeling of the whole church is something peaceful and calm. The garden is very beautiful. And then the welcome we've had is very beautiful. And tonight, we're honored to have the pastor of the church and his wife. And we'd like to thank Mr. and Mrs. Bear for helping us. Just to bring you back up to date, we were thinking to do this little teaching here. And my teacher, it took him 20 years to finish it for us. And we were thinking to have that time. Since we're Americans, we can do things faster. So we thought maybe 10 years would be enough. And we had a plan to cover, this is a book called Lamrim, Chandu Lamgi Rinpa, which means the steps of the path to enlightenment. So the theory, the theory is that you study one by one certain spiritual realizations. Like, for example, a meditation on the fact that you will have to die one day, or a meditation on loving every living creature in this world. And those meditations are arranged in a special order. And the idea is that if someone takes you through them slowly, properly, then you can learn all the steps to becoming an enlightened being. Then there's a custom called the Nyamtri, where you study each meditation, but then you don't go on until you all get it, until you all internalize it. And so I've known some Lamrim teachers who started on step number one, and then 30 years later, all their students were still on step number one, and the teacher passed away, and that was the end of it. But the idea for this series of teachings is that we would learn one step at a time from the steps of the path to enlightenment, and then we would go on a retreat together in some quiet place out in the forest and for 10 days and try to internalize that teaching. So the plan is twice a year to do the theory, the book, in a setting like this one, and then twice a year following that, maybe a month, 2 months later, to go together on a silent retreat for 10 days and work really hard on internalizing that teaching. To really appreciate each of the steps or to internalize them requires that you meditate. The section on meditation is one of the last sections of the whole book, because in Tibet it would be assumed that you were pretty good at meditating already. So what we our plan for this series of courses, which will take 10 years, is that we'll go to the back first, study the detailed instructions there on how to meditate, and then the next section after that, which is very famous, it's a section about how reality really works, how things really work, where do the people and things around you really come from, and how can you help the world, change the world, bring peace to the world, remove poverty, illness, war from the world by tweaking reality. So there's a section on tweaking reality. I like to think of the Matrix, where Keanu Reeves, who's never figured out anything, he figures out that the world is like a computer program, and then he tweaks it, and I enjoy that. I enjoy the scene at the end where he just figured out how to tweak reality. Somebody shoots a gun at him, and then instead of ducking, he just holds out his hand, and I guess he does something with the binary code that runs the program that's running his world, and then the bullets just drop to the ground. So we're trying to do something similar. We're doing something extremely similar. We're trying to use deep states of meditation to be able to see into the code that underlies reality itself, and then do tweaking of that reality to stop war, hunger, illness, and death itself. That's the idea, okay? So a small underpinning. So we are going to be studying in this course the meditation part, which you need to access the code, right? To get deep down enough into the world to see the code, you have to be in deep meditation. You can't break the code really unless you can go very deeply into meditation. So we are going to study that first, and then we were going to study the code itself and how to manipulate the code of reality. And then after that, we were going to go back and start the book. Step one to the last step, and apply the meditation and the tweaking of reality to each of the steps of the path to enlightenment, right? So we're starting at the back first, and then we'll go back to the beginning. And then, 8 years from now, or 6 years from now, we'll be out of the back of the book. The back of the book will have been done already. So then we're going to skip to another text, which was written in 1409, something like that, by the teacher of His Holiness, the first Dalai Lama. And in that book, he gives much greater detail about how to tweak the reality. So we'll, 6-7 years from now, when we're done with this book, having already been through the last part about tweaking, we'll switch to an even more famous book on tweaking, all right? And that'll be 400 pages of tweaking, all right? So that will take a while. And I just think it's a nice way to spend your life for 10 years. The whole book is full of beautiful, beautiful practices for conducting your life and helping other people. You know, things like patience and how to live an ethical life, how to be generous to other people, things like that, how to generate joy, how to generate compassion. So all of those subjects we'll be studying under the microscope of deep meditation and an understanding of how reality works. So there are a lot of people who are just flying into the teaching on the weekends. I think there were about 50 people more or something, I don't know. And then I sort of wanted them to hear all of the meditation part uninterrupted. So we did half of it last weekend. We'll be doing the other half of it next weekend. We did not cover any of homework four, those of you who've been struggling with it. All right, sorry. I should have told you, right? But I hope you figured it out. Or maybe you just had some good time at the cafe. So tonight we're going to skip to class six. So four and five we'll get on the weekend with the other guys to learn more about how to meditate. Right? So what we're going to do while they're away is start the final section on tweaking reality, right? How to tweak reality. I'd like to give I talked about it the other day, but I'd like to repeat it. On, was it Monday? Yesterday. we did like, I don't know, 5 hours of a very, very advanced book on, it's the text from my own monastery that was written 500 years ago on, you know, it was an advanced manual on tweaking. And I've been doing that book for 7 years with some of my students, and I think it will take another 10 or 14 years. So we were working on that text just because we have to do that every few months or they're never going to finish. And we had an extra day on Monday. And so during those classes, I did a short demonstration and I talked about the idea of tweaking. I'd like to just do it again for 5 minutes. And then we'll jump into this explanation, which is it was taught orally in 1921 over a 24-day period by Paboka Rinpoche, who is the teacher of Chijan Rinpoche, who is the teacher of the current Dalai Lama. And Chijan Rinpoche was also the teacher of my teacher. My teacher also met Paboka Rinpoche when he was a teenager. And Paboka, there's a beautiful story that my teacher had just been appointed the Nyerpa of Gerong House, Gerong Kansen. So Gerong is one of the colleges, like Oxford has colleges, right? Gerong is one of the colleges of Serame Monastery. Sera is one of the greatest. It's one of the big three monasteries of Tibet. It had about 10,000 monks. Then it has 12 colleges, and Gerong College is my college, and it's my teacher's college, and it was Paboka Rinpoche's college, you see? So we own Paboka Rinpoche. And he came to give a talk like this at Gerong Kansen, you know, sponsored it in the late 1930s, and my teacher was a teenager at the time. And then there's a beautiful story that my teacher was at the time very naughty. For example, in Tibet, the monks took their shoes off at the door of the monastery. The monastery was a small city. It had 10,000 people in it, but the monks would take their shoes off at the door of the monastery, at the front gate of the monastery. So one of the typical things my teacher enjoyed doing was spreading thumbtacks all over the opening of the gate. And he had a special skill that I think called Pangda. Say Pangda. Pangda is two words, Pak and Nda. Okay, Pak and Nda. Pak means dough, like cookie dough. Okay. Call from God. So, Pak means do. Da means a spear or a projectile. So my teacher, Ken Rinpoche, he was known for his skill at Pangda. Bangda means you are sitting in a huge assembly of monks with like 3,000 monks from your college, and everyone's chanting these deep texts, you know, and then he would wait until the guy's mouth was open, and then he'd go, Bangda. There'd be this contest to see if you could, if the guy was like over there, like if you could hit him right in the mouth, and then he'd be choking on it. And he was like number one in Bangda. And he was really good at acting innocent. So the people around him would always get in trouble. And he wouldn't get in trouble. And then he was headed towards being a cook in the monastery, which is what happens to Bangda at first. It's probably some kind of karma. To be a cook at our monastery is no small thing. I mean, the pot, you can climb into the pot. Like, if they put you to cleaning that pot, it takes like 4 or 5 hours. And so he was on his way to being a cook. Then he met Papa Gurmiji. And Papa... Papa Gurmiji came to his house. And my teacher was Nyerpa. Nyerpa means he got stuck being quartermaster of the house. Like he has to watch over how many bags of butter they have, yak butter they have. He has to keep count of them, like that. So he was Nyerpa, but that means he got to meet Papa Gurmiji, who came to check out the refreshments before he gave the talk. And then there's a story that he held my teacher's head in his hands. And he said, Ding Jambuchi Insare. It means, I think this one will turn out well, like that. I think this one will be good. He just held his head like that. And then he went on and gave his teaching. And then from that day, something happened in Rinpoche's mind. And he became, when they had the final debates, when he graduated with his Geshe, out of 10,000 monks, he was number one. He defeated 10,000 monks in debate. And in the final debate is held in the Dalai Lama's personal quarters. So he did meet Papa Gurmiji and he got this blessing and he received the teachings on this. So I just want to demonstrate just one small demonstration from which pretty much summarizes everything you're going to hear for the next 5 days. Because I struggled with emptiness for a long time in the monastery. And, you know, I told a story the other day that my teacher challenged me to meditate about emptiness. And I had read all these books about emptiness, none of which was correct. And they're still not correct in English. And one of them said emptiness was just close your eyes and everything is black. One of them said emptiness means don't think about anything. One of them said emptiness means everything's an illusion and it doesn't matter whether you're nice to people or you hurt people. And these are all very serious mistakes about the nature of the computer program. You see, it's not true that the ultimate meaning of life is a black hole. And it's not true that you get to the ultimate meaning of life by sitting and thinking about nothing and staring at a wall. And it's not true that the ultimate meaning of life is everything is illusion and it doesn't matter. In fact, quite the opposite, right? Everything depends on how kind you are to other people. So really, the big leap that you have to make is how do you tie an understanding of the ultimate reality of all things to kindness towards other people? I mean, why is there a connection between the way reality really works and kindness towards other people? Where do compassion and ultimate reality meet? Okay? And you can understand it in like 5 minutes. And then we'll go through this beautiful text and you'll understand it again at the end. All right? So here we go again. What is this thing?
A pen.
Yeah, it's a pen. If a dog came into this room, and I always picture them at this moment, a little puppy dog. My teacher loved dogs. He always had puppies running around. And if a puppy, because he wasn't allowed to have one in the monastery, so he had many. And And if the puppy dog comes up and we wave this pen, what will the dog do?
Chew on it.
So he will take it in his mouth and he'll chew on it. So to the dog, this is not a pen, it's a, you could call it a chew toy, okay? It's something to chew on. To the human, it's a pen. So then some philosophical questions arise. Who's right? Yeah, I think you have to say both. You can't say the human is more right than the dog. In the end, you know? Humans like to say the dog ruined my pen. But I imagine the dog is thinking, that guy's wasting a perfectly good chew toy. You know? You know, you can't really say that one is more right than the other. I don't, you know, obviously you can't say that one of them is wrong, right? One is seeing one thing according to their own context, and one is seeing a different thing. In the same room at the same time with the same thing, you see? You can almost, well not almost, you can say that there are two realities running in the room at the same time. There's a dog's reality running in the room, parallel universes. You know, physicists are up to what, 17 now I think, or something. But actually there are as many worlds in this room, there are as many rooms in this room as there are people, because each person is seeing a different room, right? So, another question for you. If I put this object down on the stage, and if we all leave the room, and if there are no dogs in the room, then what is it? Huh? Somebody said nothing. I mean, or you could say it's just a black cylinder or something like that. But it's definitely, it's not either one of those other things by itself, right? When the human walks in and they kind of lay a trip on it, it becomes a pen. When the dog comes in and chews on it, it becomes a chew toy. If there's no humans and no dogs and you just set it on the steps here, then it's not really anything until someone comes in, right? So next question for you, is the pen coming this way or is the pen coming this way? Sorry? Yeah. You mean from us? Yeah, it's coming from us, right? Can we agree? You gotta nod or you can't go home.
Yes.
Alright. My teacher said if you don't nod, you don't get home. Alright. It must be coming this way, alright? Because the dog sees a chew toy validly, and the human sees a pen validly. So, it must be coming this way. If it were coming this way, then either the human would be salivating or the dog would be writing, right? If it were either a chew toy or a pen this way, from its own side, then the dog would write with it, or else both of them would chew on it, you see? If it were something in itself coming this way, so its existence as a pen depends on my mind making it into a pen. Next question, is that a conscious process? Did you, when I held this up, did you think, oh, let me think of it as a pen, and then I can write with it? Did you have to think that way?
No.
No, you didn't have to think that way. If you really wanted it to be something else, could you close your eyes, think hard, wish hard? If you wanted it to be a stick of diamond, right? Could you just close your eyes and wish real hard and then you want to try? Here we go. Close your eyes. Wish that it was a big diamond. I'll split it with you, the prophets. Okay, open your eyes. What do you see? So it is coming from your mind, but that's not under your current conscious control. Okay? It is coming from your mind. But you can't say to yourself, oh, I want it to be a diamond, or I want it to be a gold stick, or something like that, right? It is coming from your mind, but there's some kind of, you're forced to see it in a certain way, okay? Now, how do we explain that? How do we explain that in, how did Lord Buddha explain it? Karma, okay? We explain it like, what does karma mean? Let's say Rebecca needs a pen, all right? You need a pen, right? All right. She really needs a pen because she forgot to bring her pen to take notes, apparently. And And so I want to help her, all right? I want her to have a pen. I like these pens, you know. I actually, these are hard to find. I really like them, you know. But I'm going to give it away to her because I love her. And I want her to be happy, right? So then I reach out to give her a pen. The mind is like a video camera. The mind records everything you say, everything you think, everything you ever do in your whole life is permanently recorded in your mind, right? Like a huge hard disk. That's why people get confused and senile late in their life, because there's so much data in there, right? It's built up, overbuilt up. So when I release the pen with the intention to help her, a seed is planted in my mind, right? You can say a karmic seed is planted in my mind. In the recesses of the mind, within the subconscious, that seed, like all other seeds, grows exponentially. Its power multiplies exponentially, right? Like an acorn, right? I mean, just consider that an acorn which weighs 1 gram in time produces an oak tree which weighs tons, right? That's extraordinary ability to replicate itself under the ground, from under the ground, right? Mental seeds are no less powerful. In fact, they're more powerful. So within the subconscious, the perception and the imprint made by offering her a pen exponentially multiplies under the ground of the conscious mind. And then I'm able to see many pens later. Right? If you offer someone one pen, a gift of one pen, you will receive many pens back. You will see many pens. Okay? That's why you see a pen when I hold up that thing. I need a bag. Sorry. It's an Indian gift. The reason you saw a pen when I held it up was that there was a seed in your mind for a pen. That seed was planted by offering a writing instrument to another person who needed one, or some similar kind of kindness, all right? That's true of every person you ever met, and that's true of every object you ever saw, and every church you ever sat in, and every carpet you ever sat on, and every air conditioner that blew on you, what, is it all cranked down by the way? Everything that you experience in your life around you, each different object and each different person has been produced by a separate seed. They are coming this way, right? They are coming this way. And whether you like them, whether they're nice or they're not nice, whether the place is hot or cold, whether the carpet is soft or hard, it's all coming from you. It's all coming from how much kindness you've paid to other people. So we can see that compassion and the world are actually linked together. See, how you treat other people has created every detail of the world around you and of your own body and mind. You see? If I'm blessed with a healthy body, if I'm blessed to see this body is healthy, it's because I have served other people, okay? Sick people. And the whole world is like that. So emptiness means if you took away all the seeds in my mind, and if you took away all the kindnesses I have paid to other people, what would this be? It would just be a black stick, you see? I wouldn't see it as a pen. It can only be a pen if I have been kind to other people. By itself, it's like a blank white screen. And everything in the world is the same. Every person you ever met wasn't nice, and they weren't mean either. They were just blank white screens. They were neutral. If you experience them as kind, it's because you've been kind to other people. Seeds are ripening in your mind to see them as kind. And if you see them as unpleasant, then that's because you've been unpleasant to other people. Last thing, then we can go to the book, which just tells you all this in 100 pages. How do you get to heaven? Then. How do you get to heaven then? Huh?
Take care of other people.
Yeah, you just go crazy taking care of other people. You consciously plant wildly huge amounts of seeds from being kind to other people. If you have a person in your life that you don't like, which most of us do, right? At least one, right? If there's somebody in your life who's bothering you or hurting you, then you can change that by removing the seed in your mind which was planted there when you were not nice to somebody else, right? So there is such a method of removing negative seeds from your mind. If you removed all the negative seeds from your mind that cause you to see people and places as unpleasant, then every single place and every single person you ever met would be pleasant. If you were as kind as God to every living being, right? If you planted seeds on that level, then you would start to see the people around you as angelic. And you would be in heaven, right here. You see? You don't have to go somewhere. There's a joke in Tibet that heaven's not like 3 miles past the back of the moon or something. Okay? You would just be seeing pens instead of dog, what do you call it? Chew toys. Right? You would graduate from seeing chew toys to seeing pens. You would graduate from seeing normal people to seeing angels. And then you would be in heaven. Alright? That's the reason we're studying reality tweaking methods, is to reach heaven and bring other people there. In the process, hunger, poverty, war, death itself are erased from this earth. It's cool. And that's why we're here. And that's what we're trying to achieve. Here we go. Ready? So this begins class 6. We'll go back to class 4 and 5 on Friday and Saturday. You got to do your homework, please, okay? If you're one or two behind, catch up in the next. Tomorrow you have a day off. Please catch up, all right? I don't feel comfortable with people teaching if they haven't completed all their work. And I won't give you a certificate if you don't complete all your work. Because I don't feel comfortable with you knowing half of it or three quarters of it or something like that. Or not being able to express it to somebody, okay? All the text is there. The teaching is there. People have spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars to get you here. The bears have, you know, their whole congregation has sweated to make this place ready for you. And all these people are putting out all this effort. You can do a little bit of homework. And then you'll be qualified to teach it. The reason for me to teach it, personally, I have 1,000 other things I'd like to be teaching. But I felt like if my teacher spent 20 years loading this into me, I would like to offload it. I would like to download it to other people. And I would like you to become vessels of the same teaching. And then I would like you to see you create other vessels of the same teaching. So I'm just really physically pouring it into you. And then what has to happen is you have to pour it into somebody else, or the whole exercise is useless. You know, this book has been passed on. The Lam Rim has been passed on for 918 years, all right? Are you gonna mess it up now? You know, are you gonna be the person who doesn't do their homework and doesn't pass it on? Do you wanna be responsible for breaking a 918-year tradition, you know? I don't think so. My work is done when I teach you the last page. Then your work begins actually next week. To pass it on to other people. And I beg you to pass it on to other people. That's why we're here. Right? So you have to get it straight, and you must pass it on to other people. Because that's what we're doing. Then we can help the world. Okay, here we go. You keep saying, here we go. So I'm reading the Tibetan text out loud as a blessing, which is a 10th century blessing that you will get it into your heart. And at the most unexpected moments, these things will come into your mind because you have the oral blessing from the lineage. Okay? So, are we okay anymore? Yeah, wow, good job. Alright. He's working really hard to get this ready for you, so you should thank him. Someday. Alright. Part two, meaning now that we've finished how to achieve perfect meditation, which we'll continue on Friday and Saturday, right? Now that you know how to meditate perfectly, I am going to teach you, he says, the essence of wisdom itself, which is called Hakdong. Say Hakdong.
Hakdong.
Hak means special. Tong means to see. Hak Tong is a special kind of insight into how reality works. It's Keanu Reeves in the corridor just before he holds his hand up. He gets Hak Tong. He sees into the program and he sees how he can make the bullet stop. Okay? That's called Hak Tong. In Sanskrit, Hak is the. Tong is Pashyana. So this in Sanskrit is called Vipassana. Say Vipassana. It's not Vipassana or what? I don't know. That's a corruption that happened about 18 centuries ago. Okay. So there are three sections to this explanation of how to get into the guts of the program that's running your world. Kansaki Dharmekten of Bepa. I will explain to you why you personally don't exist in the way you thought. Okay? Number two, Chit Dharmekten Labdepa. Then I will explain to you why all the other stuff around you doesn't exist in the way you thought. Okay? This is not some philosophical exercise. Alright? If you could understand how you really are, you could change your everything about you. And if you understood how other things in the world, why they happen, really, you could change them. War, hunger, poverty, death itself, you could change them. If you understood the program. Okay? And then I'm going to lead you into how to apply that in a deep state of meditation. The way you get to the program can only be through deep meditation. You go into deep meditation, you fool around with the program, you come out and weird stuff happens. Right? Cool stuff happens. My teacher asked me to do an experiment to see if I had really reached the code. Alright? And it was just, what do you call it? Artificial experiment. He said, Mike, I want you to prove to yourself that you have unlocked this code. You know, I said, okay, Rinpoche, what do you want me to do? You like fly in the sky or, you know, what would you like me to do? He says, you go to Manhattan and start a $1 million business. I'm like, Rinpoche, that's like the worst thing you could do to me. You know, I have no interest in business. I don't like business people. I don't like money. I don't need money. I don't want money. I don't want to have those things. I'm happy in the monastery. I have a tiny little room. I've lived here for 10, 20 years. I don't need anything. I don't want it. He says, yeah, but you have to prove to yourself that you really understood the code. And then you're going to teach it to other people and they're going to ask you, have you understood the code? And then you're going to say, yes. And then they're going to say, prove it. And then you're going to say, well, I can't. You know? So he said, you go to New York, you start a $1 million company by tweaking the code. Yeah. Just to prove to yourself and other people later on. Okay? Then maybe they'll listen to you. Yeah, so I went to Manhattan with no experience, no training, no knowledge. I didn't even know how to get to Manhattan. And we started a company and we gave away the money to refugees, right? The company reached $250 million last year. It's the fastest growing company in the history of New York City. It doubled every year for 15 years. And I worked half time. I worked 6 months a year, 3 days a week. Right? And just tweaking. Go in, deep meditation, go into the code, tweak it. And then go home and relax and do your Geshe studies. You see? So you can do it. Anything you want, you can use it. I think it's good to use it to do some kind of experiment in your own life. Tweak something that you want to happen. I had a birth defect in my toe. I fixed it with... I tweaked that also, right? Now I do ballet. I couldn't walk on that point. Stuff like that, you know, prove to yourself that it works sometime, all right? That's the point. and then use it to fix Iraq and Afghanistan and hunger in Africa and things like that. Do a little experiment and then do a big experiment. Do something that means more in the world. Right? Okay. Very, very beautiful. He divides his explanation of how reality works into two parts. He says, there's reality that you encounter in deep, deep meditation. In extremely deep meditation, there's the code of reality that you encounter there. Nyamshak, it's called like the sky. It's called sky meditation. Okay? It's called sky meditation. And you, Namkatabu, it's the direct perception of ultimate reality. It's called like the crystal sky in front of your eyes. Something like that. Okay? Then Jetob Kimatabu Kyoto. Jetob means after you see the real workings of reality deeply for the first time. It takes maybe 20 minutes, right? When you come out, all these cool things happen to you. You can see 500 years into the future. You can meet angels. You have ultimate love for every creature. You see every living being on all planets. For a few stars. That's called Jetob. The next 24 hours, after you see the program directly for the first time, is called Jetob. Gimadabu means illusory, and that's a long story. But basically it means that after that you realize that nothing was the way you thought it was. After that you realize that nothing was the way you thought it was. Now when you look at a pen, you almost directly see the day you gave a pen to Rebecca. You see? So your whole experience of your life is much different. You don't think, oh, I have to order some more of these on the internet. Or, you know, I hope the factory in Japan hasn't closed. Or, I wonder if that stationery store in Manhattan is still selling boxes of these so I can get some more. You don't think like that. You look at the pen and automatically comes into your mind, I should be more generous to keep these pens going. You see what I mean? You don't see it as the way that you used to see it. And then, when you come out of the direct perception, you go back to seeing less than ultimate reality. But you know you're not seeing ultimate reality. You know you're wrong. You go back to seeing things slightly wrong. Because you can't help yourself. But you know you're wrong. Alright? It's like the difference between not knowing you're wrong when you're wrong and knowing you're wrong when you're wrong. In Jetob, you know you're wrong when you're wrong. Right? And then you spend the next 500 years or so getting it right. Which involves deep insights into how things work and many, many experiments like that come to you. And then your mind changes. Right? And then later on you're into ultimate reality directly all the time. But it takes some time. And during that time it's cool because you have all these cool insights, for example, that nothing works, etc. Right? And weird things start to happen. We were talking about the other night. Cool stuff starts to happen. British Airways calls you. British Airways has 43,000 employees, $12 billion company. They call you, they say, could you come teach this stuff to our employees? You know? And you're like, what? And they're like, come to London, we'll fly you in, bring a couple of people with you, we'll teach it to our staff. This reality tweaking thing, because we want to be successful. And we went, right? Started teaching them. It's cool. So, things start happening. Weird stuff starts to happen. Cool stuff. Happy stuff. Alright. Number 1. In order to understand how we go into that sky meditation, right? Where you see all things, ultimate reality. Ultimate reality is not a positive thing. Ultimate reality is the lack of something. Alright? Ultimate reality is the lack of something. Right? Is there an African elephant sitting in this church right now? No. Okay? So that's the lack of elephant reality in this church right now. Is it a positive thing or a negative thing? Yeah, it's the absence of something, right? Is the thing which isn't here something which, generally speaking, exists in this world or not? No, I mean, if I say, is there a lack of elephant in this room? Yes. Do elephants exist, generally speaking, in our world? Yeah. Now I'll ask you another question. Is there a two-headed, purple, 23 and a half foot elephant rampaging through this church at this moment? No. Kat, you didn't turn around to check. Okay? I was watching her, okay? She's got the best view of the aisle. You know? I mean, if we had a trouble with an elephant in the church, you'd want her to at least check. Right? Why didn't you turn around to check if there was a two-headed, purple, 23 and a half foot elephant rampaging through the church? Yeah, because they just aren't something that we have to worry about. They don't exist in this world, generally speaking. All right? There's no such thing. All right? You didn't have to turn around to see if there was one in this church, because no such thing exists. All right? That's the same way ultimate reality is. All right? Ultimate reality is the absence of something in the world that never could have been here anyway. All right? What's that? What's an example of one of those things? What's an example of one of those things that never could have been in the room anyway? A pen that was coming this way. Point to the pen. Ready? Point to the pen. Everybody point to the pen. Alright, now put your arm down. Now point to the pen which was not created by my kindness to other people. That's emptiness, and that's ultimate reality. Cool? Got it? Where is the pen? How many pens are there in the world that didn't come from being nice to other people?
Zero.
Yeah, zero. Alright? Those kinds of pens that never existed and never could exist are what we call gotcha. Okay, say gotcha. Gotcha means the thing that was never there and actually couldn't be there, that you always thought was there. Okay? The thing that couldn't be there, that you always thought was there. If you believe that you can only get pens by being kind and sharing them with others, would you fight with someone else about a pen?
No.
Would it be possible to fight with someone else for a pen if you believed, truly believed, that the only way to get a pen is to share it with other people? Could you fight for oil supplies in the world with China, right? Could you have a war, which is coming, right? Very possible. You know? There are generals in China who said, there are generals in China who have already calculated that there are not enough bullets in all the American Army's reserves to shoot the amount of Chinese they could send to California. There are generals in China who have already calculated that. Even if every bullet hit a person and killed them, there wouldn't be enough bullets in the United States to stop their whole army. Okay? It could come, right? It could come. Right? This thing could come. And you know the Americans that have warships off their coast now, South China Sea, on exercises. That's like putting a Chinese warship off of San Diego. I mean, it's a little bit belligerent, right? So, it's very possible that a war could happen over oil supplies. It's a very possible thing, right? It's a scary possible thing. What's the only way to get oil supplies for your country? Share them with other people. You see, it's the same with pens. You just gotta go to another scale, right? You gotta go to a larger scale. The only way to get new supplies of renewable energy for your country are to share the current supplies of energy with other countries in need. Okay? That's the only way, right? If everybody in the United States and China understood that, could there be a war over oil between the two countries? It's not possible, right? So we have stuff. I mean, December we're going for a month to China, right? We've been working in China for 5 years or something. And we're working in the United States for a little bit more. But if we could change the understanding of all the people in each country, and if they understood that oil only came from sharing energy with other countries in need, then a war would not be possible. You see? So these ideas are very powerful. And these ideas are not just some kind of, what do you call it? New Age discussion, you know? These are powerful ideas. You will get more supplies of renewable energy for your country the more you share what you have with other countries. That's all. Okay? Mm-hmm. Oil, whichever came to your country without helping another country, is? It doesn't even exist. There's no such thing. Alright? When you fight with another country over oil supplies, do those oil supplies ever exist? The oil supplies that you perceive. When you fight with another country over oil supplies, do those oil supplies exist in the way you think they do?
No.
No, there's no such oil supplies. That's the weird thing. People have wars over 23.5-foot, two-headed purple elephants. Oh, really? People have wars over things that don't exist. That's gotcha, okay? Gotcha. That's gotcha. Gotcha means something you thought was there that wasn't there all along. Right? And the entire pain, suffering, anxiety, trouble of 6 billion human creatures is an accident, all directed towards things which never even existed. Phantoms. Just phantoms. Everything the world is worried about, and everything the world works for, and especially everything the world fights over, never existed in the first place. That's the huge irony of our life. You know? It's bad that people are suffering in the world, getting old, dying, fighting, going hungry. That's a bad thing. The fact that it's all a mistake and unnecessary is 1,000 times worse, right? Some guy breaks through a plate glass window at Scottsdale Mall to hug a lady in a fur coat and slashes his body with the glass by accident. You know? Out of intense love for the lady in the fur coat, he breaks through the plate glass window, cuts himself up to hug this beautiful lady in a fur coat who is a mannequin. And when he gets through the glass with all that pain, I don't know, I don't think it's so much fun with America. Alright. That's what's happening. Kevangebene means ascertaining that it must be a certain way. We'll get to it later. Demachita. And then Dema Tujangebene Deshio. The last two points are ways of proving that things don't exist the way you thought. You will find out that things were not one thing the way you thought, and you will find out that things were not plural things the way you thought. That's all. Those are the things we're going to discuss this week. Okay? Those are the things we're going to discuss to get to an understanding of where reality really comes from. We'll go for a few more minutes, then we'll take a break, alright? Because I know it's been a while. We actually got through half a page. Deka shinetamo shi drutsam nyomo lungjo go nyombe jitembe lam shirab nam chengi vato so mi gopar. A big part of the reason to learn how reality works at its foundation is to remove negative emotions from the human mind permanently. Alright? That's called in Sanskrit nirvana. Nir means out. Van means blow. Van came into ventilation, wind, words like that. Okay? Fan. they all come from vana. So nirvana means to blow out something. And what you're blowing out is your negative emotions. Desire, anger, jealousy, all of those feelings, that negative feelings that you have. What he's saying, Shiraki Namba Chen here is a very, Jikten Belam, Shiraki Namba Chen means the path of the world. The path of the world. Shiraki Namba Chen means, we talked about it the other day, alright? You want to make your mind calmer, right? So you decide, rather than having coffee with 4 scoops of coffee in it, you will have coffee with 3 scoops of coffee in it, alright? And then you give up, you drop the 4-scoop coffee, and you go for the 3-scoop coffee. And you start to feel a little calmer, right? Then if you want to get more calm, what do you do? 2 scoops, alright? Then you get down to 1 scoop. Then you go to decaf, okay? Then you could go to what do you call it, the British tea? Earl Grey. You go to Earl Grey, alright? Then you go to green tea. Then you go to decaf green tea with soy, steamed soy milk. Then you go to, the next step normally for me is, what's that like spicy Indian tea? Rooibos chai. Okay, rooibos has no caffeine in it, right? You go to rooibos chai, but it still gives you a little kick, you know? I mean, not much. Then you go to peppermint. And then you go to water. I mean, eventually you end up at water, right? Does the drinking the water feel more calm than drinking the 4-scoop coffee? Did you feel progressively more calm as you dropped caffeine? I mean, normally, you feel more relaxed, you sleep much better. Even drinking 1 cup of coffee a day screws up most people's sleep and they never get it. Right? They say, I can't sleep. I said, do you drink coffee? They say, yes. I said, just go away, don't ask me that. You know. But the point is, that kind of approach, we just call relatively happier, okay? Relatively happier is a good translation of Shiraki Namba Chen. You feel more calm with 3 scoops of coffee than you did with 4 scoops of coffee, but you're still a nervous person. You didn't solve anything. Relatively speaking, you're only 90% as nervous as you were before, and you were a wreck before. So now you're 90% of a wreck, but you feel better, right? Just going through this thing where you cut down on the caffeine, but you don't get rid of the caffeine, okay? As long as you don't get rid of the caffeine, your mind is still, what do you call it? Disturbed by the caffeine, right? It's just less disturbed than it was before. So you feel better. That's called Shiraki Namba Chen. Jikten Belam means, this is the world's approach to things. Nyomong Run Gyur Go Numba means, all you're doing is suppressing your negative emotions, you're not dealing with them. You're not stopping them. You drink less coffee, you'll get less upset in traffic. But the minute you start with more coffee, you'll get more upset again. It's only a temporary fix. Go nimba means you are just suppressing your negative emotions. You are not stopping them at the root. You are not cutting the root out of them. Right? If you do a nice meditation for a half hour on your breath, then when you get up, you will be less likely to get angry for the next hour. 3 hours later, you'll probably get as angry as you ever got before. It's not an ultimate meditation. It's not helpful. It just suppresses the negative emotions temporarily. It doesn't treat the root of the negative emotions. And the negative emotions come back when the meditation wears off. Right? We are looking for a meditation which would permanently change the very capacity of anger to grow in the human mind. Alright? And that's a different meditation. Alright? Here we go. Rangre dun nyan dak zo. Relating to the Nyanja so early in the We are looking for a style of meditating which would actually get into the very foundation of our negative emotions and destroy them at the root. Right? We don't want a meditation which makes us less likely to get angry, or which makes us less angry for a few hours, or less capable of anger for a few hours. We would like a meditation which destroys the very seeds of anger within the human mind. We would like a meditation which, after we got good at it, we would be incapable of being irritated by other people. Okay? Yeah. All right? We're talking something much deeper. We would like to make a fundamental change in the human mind which no longer allows you to get angry, even under compelling circumstances. You know, someone could be cutting your hand with a razor blade and you wouldn't get upset. Right? We would like to find, by the way, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't take steps to stop them from cutting your hand with a razor blade. But you would be calm and happy and peaceful. You wouldn't feel upset or angry. Right? And actually, you'd be better at stopping them than if you were upset at it. So, gushing, they kena kome nushi so chiruma gomkyan ringe sipe nyeba to par jurwa ngakule. I'm watching the time for you, okay? I am going to give you a break. There are deeper states of meditation than the level of meditation you require to tweak reality. Got it? Alright, I'll say it again. There's a certain level of meditation you have to get to tweak the program that runs your world, reality itself. There are even deeper states of meditation than that. Okay? But we don't need them. Alright? There's no reason to go to them. Alright? There's a certain reachable, like medium level of meditation you can get to. If you get to that, you have access to the program. A certain stillness of mind will grant you access to the program. There are deeper levels of meditation where the mind becomes even more still, but we don't need them. We just need to get to the point of stillness where we can access the program and change reality. We don't need to go through the 1,000 levels of deeper meditation that there are, because there's no function of those. They don't do anything. Okay? Get to the amount of deep meditation that you need to remove anger permanently from your mind. That's enough. Okay? That's enough. That level of meditation, by the way, is extremely difficult to reach in one lifetime. All right? But just so you know, there are deeper ones. All right? Okay. I'll say this quote and then we'll stop and we'll take a break. Kyuki tanga janda wa sanden go shin ma tab kyang du ki mikre sa shin du sipa da mi go ba gi. This is an ancient text called The Praise of Those Things which are Worthy of Praise. The Praise of Those Things Which Are Worthy of Praise. People who follow your teaching. Whose teaching? Buddha. It's the Buddha. Okay. This ancient book. They don't even achieve the actual level of the first dhyana stage. Okay, there's 8 stages of deep meditation. Four called formless realm, and the first one is divided into mushi, which means the actual first one, and then there's sort of a little preliminary, the first one called samden dambu mushi mitom samden dambu nyergo nyendo michogme. Say samden
dambu
nyendo
michogme.
It's not even the first of the 8 deep levels of deep meditation. It's the preliminary to that. But that's the level you need to get to tweak the program. That's all you need to get to. You don't even need to get to the actual stage number 1, much less the other 7. That's what he's saying. Sabdeng Wishi Matokyam. They don't even achieve the main level of level number 1, much less the other 7. But, Dukhi Minre Tsashindu. But, what do you call that? I'll give you the circumstance, you tell me what we call it. I don't know what to call it. What's that guy that played James Bond that I didn't like so much? After Sean Connery.
Roger Moore.
Yeah, Roger Moore. Anyway, so, you know, there's a huge diamond in a museum somewhere. He did some movie, The King, what's it? The Thomas Crown Affair. Right? Him and, was it him? Yeah, he's worse, right? Just like effeminate James Bond. I mean, anyway, so he and this lady decide to steal this big diamond or something like that. I don't remember. It was not a memorable movie. But anyway, they decide to steal this diamond. And then there's all these cameras on the diamond, right? And there's all these guards, security guards watching the diamond. So, Mikre, and they steal it, right? They get it. Mikre Tsa Shindu means, how do you say that in English? Under the eyes of all the guards and the cameras. It means under the eyes.
Out from under their
nose. Yeah, out from under their nose. That's good. Who said that? Yeah. From under the nose of the guards and the security camera. So this scripture says, from under the nose of the demons who would stop people from reaching enlightenment, you steal enlightenment. Like, they're all watching you. And out from under their noses, you get enlightened. Right? How's that? You stop the pain of the world. You stop the pain of the world sneaking under the noses of all the demons in the world. Alright? Without reaching the higher states of meditation. Just reaching the preliminary level of the first form realm of meditation, which is not a very high meditation. But it's enough to access the program. Okay, you just earned a break from under the eyes of the we're doing a big sale? We're not doing a big sale. Huh? There may be a big sale? I mean, that's lame.
There's a big sale.
Okay. I know. Anyway, there's a bake sale. We do bake sales during these teachings. The money goes to send young people to Tibetan monasteries for a month to study. And then they come back and teach people cool stuff like this when they get old. Huh? Oh, Rebecca, who's in charge of the bake sale, says, please overpay for all the things. So, like, it's not a problem if you pay $20 for a single cookie and give half of it to me. Okay. Have a nice break. If you'd like to say hi or you have a personal question, I'll be sitting here. We'll take about a 10-minute break. There's a sign here that I'm supposed to announce something. Wow. Who did that? Yeah, anyway. Bliss Machine is an album that was done by students at our university. Quite a good, Johnny O mainly. It's a nice album. I actually listened to the first few songs. I got to that cowboy song and I kind of gave up. Anyway, it's $10. All the money is going to support we have 40 people going into a 3-year silent retreat at the end of December. They are building their own cabins with their own money, and then they are donating those cabins to future generations of meditators. They won't be living in them. They're donating them. So she's like the farthest behind of anybody, except for these other two people. She's all that she's got up is 4 plywood walls. And she's got to get moving in the next month. So the proceeds from this spectacular album, which is only $10, are going to Coco's Meditation Camp. Okay, have a nice break. It's just water, so. It's water, so it's not so bad. Okay, let's start again. My mama used to make yak noises to get us to be quiet. All right, it worked. De la samoto maniki den, denna bebko. If you want to swipe liberation out from under the nose of all obstructing demons, you're going to have to define to yourself what is the real nature of things. Okay? You're going to have to come to an understanding. If you don't come to an understanding of the way reality works, you will never be able to stop your negative emotions. It's not possible. Okay? We have a teaching on the six perfections, right? These are the six activities of a bodhisattva. First one is giving. The second one is living an ethical life. The third one is not getting mad when you should. The fourth is being happy about doing good things. The fifth is the ability to meditate deeply. And the sixth is understanding reality. Alright? So, he says, if you don't learn about emptiness and how things really work, then if you do the other perfections, the first five, right? If you are a generous person, or you try to be ethical, or you try to stop your anger, means you will be doing so without understanding how things really work. Okay? For example, in the case of the art of not getting angry when you should have, alright? The art of not getting angry when you should have, right? Somebody cuts you off in traffic, right? Or someone yells at you at work. In the text, senzin dang chepan means there's a way to practice patience about a person who hurts you, which is ignorant. Right? There's a way to be good towards a person who has hurt you, which is ignorant. Right? You go to them, you're calm, you say, you know, you hurt me. And I'm really would like to ask you not to do that, right? And you're reasonable and you're calm and you don't yell at them and you're sweet and all that, okay? And maybe it works and maybe it doesn't work, okay? That's the problem. Maybe it works and maybe it doesn't work. That's the problem. Because you have not approached the person who's hurting you with an understanding of the deeper sources of reality, right? You haven't, in your own mind, approached this person who's hurting you with an understanding of where they came from. Right? So that the patience demonstrated by a person who understands where the world is coming from is different from the patience demonstrated by a person who doesn't know where the world is coming from. The patience of a person who doesn't understand where the world is coming from will always break down at some point. Okay? They cannot be maintained past a certain level of abuse. Alright? Someone cuts you off once, you can be patient. Someone cuts you off twice, you can be patient. someone cuts you off, bumps your fender, you know, turns around and hits you in the back. At some point, your patience will break. If you don't understand the deeper reality of this person who's bothering you, right? What's the deeper reality? I have produced this person. This person is coming because of some behavior of my own. The whole focus of a well-trained spiritual person turns away from the world to themselves. Okay? The whole focus of correcting things turns away from negotiating with the people who are hurting you to examining yourself and seeing, how did I do something like that before? And that exercise makes you an extremely mentally healthy and happy person. All right? The exercise, someone is constantly complaining to you, okay, all the time. Right? And it bothers you and it's unpleasant. And you don't have a well-educated practitioner doesn't even think about talking to them or negotiating with them or explaining to them how much their complaining is hurting them. They don't even have to. They don't even think about it. They think, oh, where did this person come from? Oh, they're complaining. They must come from complaining in some way. And that was done by me. So who do I complain to, and who can I stop complaining to? And then it will just shut them down like a faucet being turned off, you know? Like people are trying to plug a hole in the faucet, and they could go under the sink and just turn it off, you see? They're standing there with 23 towels and pushing the faucet and trying to stop it. And just open the little door under there and turn the valve and it's off, you see? The valve is your complaining. So go to the source and turn it off. And then the person will stop complaining. You see? It's very beautiful. A well-trained spiritual person who understands where reality comes from, their patience is on a different level from the patience of other people. Because their patience is infinite. It cannot be shaken. The worse things get, the more they check themselves out. The worse the other person gets, the more they examine their own heart and make themselves sweeter. So the worse the world gets, the sweeter they get. It's cool. And it's fun. Okay. No negotiation, no discussions, no confrontations, no tension, no... You don't have to talk to them. Just find out what you're doing that's similar and stop it. And then they will change. Or they'll go away or have a heart attack. Okay. Tenzin the Chepagong. Shok Sungam in Deme Cha Shindu, Tapshe Cho Rewe, Gyawe Sardromi Nipe, Tap Changchuk Yisemda, Shirup Tomani Ni Yama Tawa, Lok Gute. I love this metaphor. This is one of the most beautiful images in all of scripture. By the way, we're going to go half an hour over and get used to it. 9:30. We still won't finish tonight's lesson, right? But at least you'll be able to do like one or two homework questions and you'll feel better and I won't too. If you come to a homework question on number 6 that I didn't explain, just leave it blank for now, alright? Because we're not going to finish. He compares the journey to enlightenment to a bird flying in the sky, to an eagle flying in the sky, right? He compares your journey to enlightenment to an eagle flying through the sky. And he says, that eagle needs two wings. Right? A glorious phoenix bird with one wing don't count for much. Alright? They can't go anywhere. Right? So he says, you need two wings. What are they? One is called tap, which means method, which means all the kindnesses that you are going to be doing. Generosity to others. Serving others, being patient with others, being joyful about serving others, even meditation. Okay? These are all the things you're going to be doing to help other people. That's one wing. It's called method. Doing stuff. Right? That's one wing. Then the other wing is called understanding what's going on. You know? And we gave the example of patience with a complaining person around you. Patience with a person around you who's complaining all the time. Okay? How can you change them? Change your own complaint. Okay? Examine yourself for what are you complaining about. Alright? This powerful this powerful right hand wing of what you would call conventional patience is like a single wing. And it can't get you anywhere. You need the other wing where you understand the nature of the person who is complaining to you that you are being patient about. That they are coming from you. You cannot solve the problem without understanding that the complaining person is coming from your complaining. That understanding is the other wing. You need both wings. You need patience, yes. But you gotta know what the heck's going on to have the patience. And those are two wings. Understanding, and then stuff that you do called, they're called method and wisdom, alright? With any one of the two wings. By the way, there are people who have this wing without this wing. They are like deep into emptiness. They understand the void. You know, they go into the void regularly. But they get around a slightly irritating person and it breaks down immediately. You see? Or they don't do anything to help other people, really. They just kind of talk about emptiness all the time. Right? They have this wing and not this wing, got it? Some people have this wing and not this wing. Alright. To get to enlightenment, you've got to have both wings. Jomini Tapchanju Desenpa, he calls the method compassion, acts of compassion. But they must be united with in understanding of where stuff is coming from. Yama Dawa Lokudu. You cannot separate the two. You cannot train yourself in compassion without training yourself in where the world is coming from. And you can't train yourself in where the world is coming from unless you train yourself in compassion. It would be like a beautiful phoenix bird. The only one I've seen recently was in Harry Potter. I mean the phoenix flying and all that. I mean, try to imagine them flying with one bird. There's some joke about a duck with one leg in water. What is that?
One wing in a circle.
Oh yeah, somebody says, Geshla, do you want a hot chocolate? And then I either say, does the Pope wear a beanie? Or my dad used to say, does a bear poop in the woods? But I heard this other one the other day. It's, does a one-legged duck swim in circles? Anyway, you don't want to be like a phoenix with one wing. Jay Lame, Nelek Tope, Shero Mindena, Nenu Chanju Senva, Kunje Kyo, Sipe Tsawa, Chuta, Minu Pe, Deshe Tenda Tope, Habla Be. What is that? Do you think I know? Mamsa Namsu? Three bits will pass. Okay? Maybe the most famous short piece that Jatsukapa ever wrote, 14 verses. That's one of the verses. Neva Topeshina Mindena. If you don't possess the wisdom which understands why and how things are happening, Nyenchung Chanju Semla Kongje Kyan. You can meditate and master the attitudes of renunciation and love. You can master renunciation and compassion. But, kyan means but, sepe tsawa chupar minupe, you will not be able to cut the root of the pain of the world. You will not be able to stop the pain of the world. You will not be able to cut its source. Therefore, those of you who know Tibetan, why he has two instrumentals is interesting. Okay? He says, because you will not be able to cut it, therefore, okay, like it's redundant, it's a fault of composition, it's not allowed in Buddhist scripture. Why has he written two different words for therefore? You think about it. You must seek the means of grasping dependent origination. Okay, dependent origination is a fancy, long-winded word for how stuff happens. Let's change it. To how stuff happens. Seek the knowledge of why things, how things happen. Right? That's what Jetsun Kapa said, and we have to try to do that. I love this. I really love this next part. Alright. Shenyan, it's like Jenny going, what she does? She gets up here and she starts screaming. What does she do? Alright or something?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Okay, anyway, I love this one. Shenyan, Danzingi, Shubo. Say, sorry, Danzin, say,
good.
Shubo.
Shubo.
Is it up there somewhere? Yeah, where is that? Yeah, the second line in the middle. Say, Shubo.
Shubo.
You never heard of that, right? Shubo. Okay. This is cool. If you really get it when I say the person who's complaining about you or to you all the time has only come from your own complaining, right? Right? When I say that thing, you know, and you're sort of like attracted to it, you think, you're not even sure about it. Tetsun, here, Tetsun, the word Tetsun. Is there a Tetsun up there somewhere? At the end of the first line. Tetsu means you get a little suspicion that I might be right. Not even, you're not even sure. Okay? You're not even sure and you haven't accepted it yet. Tetsu means a little suspicion that it might be true. Alright? If you just get a little tiny suspicion that it might be true, that every negative thing that ever happened to you and every negative person you ever met was a mirror of your own behavior. Right? If you just get a little taste of that and begin to think it might be possible, that's Tetsun. Su means to eat the doubt. It means to entertain the possibility that the last irritating person you met and the 3,000 before him all came from the way you are behaving. Then Shupo. Shupo means,
well, I need a shupo.
Okay, listen carefully. That's shupo. Got it? It's onomatopoeia. Here we go again. Sorry, cat. Okay. That's, you gave it up for shupo, okay? You can always remember. Shupo means you tear the fabric of reality. You tear the fabric of suffering. You put an irreparable tear into the reality of the suffering of the world around you. And that can only get bigger. You tear a little, you put a little tear into the network of suffering around you. The fabric, the very fabric of the reality of the suffering of the world. You put a little tear, irreparable tear, and it can only get bigger. And then you will rip the suffering of the world apart. It's very beautiful. Just if you suspect that I might be right, you don't even have to believe me. Just if you start saying, okay? If you only get, then pro. Got it? Goes to pro. Alright. I love it. You start a rent in the fabric of reality that is never again the same. You will never again be the same. You can never, I'm putting a curse on you today. I'm putting a curse on you. You can never really believe that any bad thing or bad person you ever meet in the future is not a mirror of your own behavior again. I curse you tonight, now. I curse you. You can never fully hate another person again. You know, you can never fully blame another person again. I curse you. I curse you with that. Okay? You always have this little doubt that maybe it's something you did. Okay? Alright. Give a paper, let's see if you can. Where were we? some kind of football here. Oh yes. Serve chombe lotok shindu. And in time, Ser will come to destroy the lotok. Okay. Where does the name of Sera monastery come from? What's Sera mean? Yeah, Serwa means hail. Hailstones? Big hailstones. And we debate with the other great monasteries, Ganden and Devon, right? What does Depun mean? It means a pile of rice. De means rice, Pun means pile. It means their monastery was nestled on this white mountain before it got destroyed. It was called Depun. Okay. So when we debate with them in the inter-monastic debates, we say, we are Sera, you are De. You know, we are a hailstorm that crushes the rice paddy. You know? And then they say, yes, but then the hail always melts away, doesn't it? And the rice remains. You know? And so anyway, Serwe Chong means, Lotok means crops which have been destroyed by hail. Right? If you live in a country like Tibet, where the, what do you call it? The amount of food is very fragile. It's what, 20,000 feet higher, 18,000 feet higher. To grow a crop is difficult. And it, just when you get the barley growing, you know, then there's this big hailstorm and it destroys everything. Okay. Hearing me say once that the person who most irritates you in your life right now is a direct result of your own behavior will in time be a hailstorm that destroys all your suffering. Like a rice crop under these huge stones of hail. Chairpersonte, she gabale. Sunam chungur chi dila, tetsum sour, young mingyur. Tetsum sepe, tsum nikyang. Sipa, there it is again. Sipa, shopor, chepar gyur, she sumare. This is beautiful. She gapa is the 400 verses. Written by Arya Nagarjuna's dear student, Aryadeva. Okay? And he said, Shunam chungwa chibila tetsam sawa yamungyur. Those who lack sufficient goodness will not even get the suspicion that Geshe Michael might have said something correct. You see? Those who lack extremely heavy good karma, you get up and say, look, the last person that you can, that you, who complained to you all the time, came from your complaining. Just to hear those words and to give them, what do you call it? To entertain any truth to them is a sign that you have extraordinary good deeds. You have higher good karma than hundreds of thousands of other people. Yangming Gyur, Tetsam Sawar Yangming Gyur means people without extraordinary good karma will not even entertain the possibility that I was speaking the truth. Got it? All right? But even if you have a little doubt that it might be correct, if you have the least suspicion that I might be saying something true, when I say that every bad thing that I ever have to do is coming from you, sipa shupogir, you are tearing a rent, you are rending the fabric of suffering itself. Okay? And it will never be the same. It'll never come back to the way it was before I said those words, alright? Okay, so I'm going to share some bait. Dena dilaan somtlan ne gupe. Dena dilaan somtlan ne gupe. Sunung ne chinjima notar kende gibu tamba na tene. Tongi tunje ki dambar topa. Dena dilaan somtlan ne gupe. There was a thing called sok with regard to developing meditation. That was the six things you needed before you even sat down. Sok means you have to gather together these things. Why is a religious ceremony called a sok? You gather together the offerings, and you gather together the people, The offerings themselves are called tzok. Okay, you offer the tzok. Okay? So tzok means a gathering, right? Before you even try to meditate on a cushion, you must gather together certain conditions. And we listed them. There were six and there were five, right? For example, the right kind of place, and the right kind of friends, and the right kind of instructions. You need to gather these things together. Preconditions that need to be gathered together. He says, for wisdom, you're also going to have to gather together certain conditions. Bila'an, for this as well, you're going to have to collect together certain things. You are going to have to find a person who truly grasps the meaning of the teachings on emptiness in the scriptures, okay? Through personal experience. You're going to have to find a person who not doesn't only know what the books say, but has had a personal experience of those things, right? You're going to have to find a person like that. Tene, toni, tonche, ki, dama, topa. And then you're going to have to go to them and listen to them teaching, right? You need the dampa. Dampa means, like kadampa. It means, instructions, advice, teaching. Sok sok chip chong chipa. This is a very beautiful thing, okay? In the monastery, you don't study the highest teachings on emptiness for 12 years. It takes 12 years before you're allowed to study Madhyamika, higher Madhyamika. You spend the first 12 years on lower Madhyamika, Prajnaparamita, Lindogyan, Abhisamangkara. The first 12 years of your monastic career are 12 years spent on a 50-page book called The Ornament of Realizations by Aryan Sangha. You can memorize it in about a year or something. You know? And then you spend 12 years on 50 pages, 4 pages a year. Okay? You spend 12 years. Then you're allowed to go to the real teachings on emptiness. Okay? In between the 12 years of lower Madhyamika and the 4 years of higher Madhyamika, there's a tradition to go on retreat. Ken Rinpoche went to a cave and did a retreat, and he almost died there. There's a beautiful story. He almost died in that cave. He came very close to dying. But in that experience, he cleaned away the negative seeds he had in his mind that before he opened the book on emptiness. See? So the idea is, you go off on a long retreat before you're allowed to open the... Before you're even allowed to look at the book, you have to do a special retreat to get rid of old bad karma seeds in your mind and to collect new good karmic seeds. You cannot approach the subject of emptiness without undertaking very deep activities and projects to serve other people. Okay? If you want to approach the subject of emptiness, go teach yoga in a prison, which you're going to learn about on Sunday. Okay? It looks like the chaplain of the prison that we're going to work is going to give us a small talk on Sunday. Or go raise money for the 3-year retreat's food, all right? Which is our next problem. Or go raise some funds for the people who are attacking in the scriptures, for example. Okay? Before you approach the subject of emptiness, you will have to do some powerful good karma collection and some powerful bad karma removal. And in Tibet it was a retreat. Okay? In nowadays, in the monastery, my class, when we got to Madhyamika, we were required to leave the monastery for 3 months and go do some charitable project. Hands-on service of sick people or poor people or, you know, we weren't allowed to touch this book until we had done 3 months of service for other people. It's beautiful, right? It's a nice custom. So, sok sok jip jong means collect new good karma, purify your old bad karma, then study emptiness. This is a precondition to studying emptiness as much as finding a good meditation place is a prerequisite for studying shamatha. Got it? Okay. Lama yidam yame nuchene suwa dhamma so. Also, you are going to have to do a lot of asking of help from holy beings. That's a prerequisite for studying emptiness. Like, go home, just in your, this is all done in your mind, right? In the privacy of your own mind. And it's fun to talk to holy beings in your own mind, okay? Don't think you're crazy. You're not like Son of Sam or anything, alright? Go home, just talk to them. You know what I found out with Bella? Where's Bella? Like, when you need her, she's not here. Okay, that's Bella in Lama Ora's hands. Okay, like, I found out this thing with Bella. You know, like, I was there the night, the three nights she was born. and then for months I was going up to her and saying, "Hello, Bella, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba," you know, and I'm trying to get her to smile. She's just like, you know. And then one day I just went up to her and I said, "Bella, you have to smile at me. You know, like, I'm not going to do this baby talk to you anymore. Let's just talk man to man. Like, I want you to smile at me worth a smile. So you have a problem with that?" And she goes, and then, it's the same with holy beings, okay? Like, just talk to them. Just talk. They can read your mind, right? They can read your mind. So just sit down and say, "Look, Geshe Michael's starting to, hopefully he'll get to the subject. He's going to be teaching emptiness, and I just want to put in a word. You know, can you put in a good word for me? You know, like, I'm going to be studying emptiness, and I would appreciate it if you would bless my mind right now, tonight. You know, because he might start tomorrow or the next day." Okay? Just like that. Have a rational, don't do the Google Google thing. Don't say, that's like Google Google, you know. Just talk to them rationally in your head. Say, "You know, I love you very much. You're the most," they're talking about your lama, okay? Lama dam yidam yerme means your lama indivisible from your guardian angel. Lama dam yidam yerme. Your lama indivisible from your guardian angel. Same, one and the same being. You know? I'm asking my holy, sweet, precious, incomparable, most beautiful thing in the universe, Lama, inseparable from my guardian angel, I'm asking you right now, in front of all these people, to bless my mind, to teach this thing beautifully. Okay? And just talk to them rationally, like that. Sometimes out loud is fun too, in the hotel room, but you gotta close the door. Okay. You will need all the necessary preconditions. Don't ignore these things. Don't jump into the book and say, "I don't have to ask anybody anything, and I don't need to do a retreat, and I don't need to serve the poor with my hands, or I don't need to go to a prison and waste my time." I'll just tell you what the book says. He says, if you do that, you'll never get it. You can come to the teachings, you can sit there, Geshe Michael can say the same words to you that he's saying to the person who went to the prison, and that person will get it and you won't get it. And you'll be in the same room, and you'll be sitting next to each other, and you'll be eating the same cookies from Rebecca's bake sale, but you won't get it and they won't. Okay? Because there's something about the causes. What do you call it? So, the preconditions. Right? We're going to stop there. Okay? He's about to talk about why did Lord Buddha teach different kinds of emptiness, and which version should we buy? That's sort of a different subject. Do as much of the homework as you can. Number six, don't stress about it. Please, please do the homework. All these people spending hundreds of hours to help you become a teacher of some of the other people, you know? 1,000 years of lineage. Don't let it stop here tonight. You know, don't be lazy, okay? One little homework paper with, like, what, 3 questions on it? I mean, are you going to be the one who stops 1,000-year lineage because you didn't want to do 3 questions? on a Tuesday night when you had the whole day from off tomorrow? Okay. All right. Just do it. Right? And then teach it. All right. Promise?
Yes.
Mazal. Say mazal. Mazal means I swear. In the diamond business, it means I swear. Say mazal. Will you teach this to other people? Okay. Then you have to do your homework. We'll dedicate to good karma. And then tomorrow, have a nice day and just kind of relax, all right? It's going to be a long 4 days out. It's going to be, you know, tiring. And it's going to be a drain. It's a lot of hours and it's a lot of ideas. So take a nice break. Don't go to the coffee shop with your computer and all day on that. Like, go see something in Phoenix. Take your family to a nice movie. Something fun, right? Okay, here we go. Let me pick on somebody. Mercedes, you want to try? Thank you for coming, because then it makes me read this thing again myself. And I'm really grateful for that.